afternoon, and thank you for tuning into our podcast. This is a conversation that matters, and we are putting our podcast together today from Belmont University here in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Dr. John Roebuck. I'm your host. Today we have with us a senior here at Belmont University. I thought it might be interesting to hear the perspective of a millennial on leadership. So we have today Cheyenne Corbine, who is from New York, and she is a senior studying Christian leadership. We're glad to have her here this afternoon. So let's just get at it. Cheyenne, say hello.
Hello.
How are you doing today? We're good?
I am wonderful.
So I want people to get a feel for kind of who you are and kind of things you like to do. So give us a little bit of a brief glimpse of your life and a little bit of what you enjoy doing and what your passions might be.
Okay, so I am Cheyenne, and as he said, I'm from New York. I moved to Nashville 3 years ago to start at Belmont University. I've actually switched my major 3 times, which is a fun fact. Yeah, fun fact about me, no shame in it. Still scheduled to graduate on time, which is great. I'm from a bigger family. I have 3 sisters and 1 brother, which is awesome. I love my family. I miss them dearly.
So in this switching of majors,
yes,
you focused in finally on Christian leadership. What about
I did.
That, what about that major is appealing to you? Why did you choose that?
So I was actually a resident assistant at Belmont in Potter Hall. So I was working with freshman girls all the time, literally living with them and working with them, just helping them through different things. And through that process, I realized that I have not only a heart for youth ministry, but the patience, I guess, for it. Like,
sure.
When a lot of people would get frustrated, I would actually feel more driven to be there and not driven away from being there. So I just had to do some real heart examining and figure out what was going to be best moving forward. And I knew I'd be so sad when I wasn't an RA anymore. So I decided to study Christian leadership youth ministry.
So a perfect job for you when you get out then. Youth ministry is where you're focused. That's where you want to go, or you don't know?
Honestly, I don't know anymore. I love working. I'm interning for Delight Ministries right now, and I love everything that I'm doing there. So I don't know. I'm very open. I want to maybe get into the publishing industry at some point. So, yeah, figuring it out.
So for people who are listening who don't know what Delight Ministries is, tell us a little bit about
yes.
that.
So Delight Ministries is a college ministry for women who are looking for a community that is all about vulnerability and Jesus. And it was actually founded at Belmont. 2 freshmen wanted to start a Bible study in the Bell Tower, so they did. And now there's, I think, almost 100 different chapters across the United States. It has grown so much, and it's just an incredible, incredible community.
How many students overall are in that group, you think?
Well,
across those 100 campuses?
Honestly, I have no idea, because Belmont's alone, we had 300 women show up at our first meeting 2 weeks ago, so
wow.
There's a lot. There are so many.
So thousands and thousands.
Oh, yeah.
Students being yes. impacted across the country mm-hmm. By just a group. Girls doing Bible study, being
yeah.
vulnerable to each other, confiding in each other, finding a place of acceptance and
yep.
all that. Sweet.
Yeah.
So anybody who's been listening to these podcasts, you know I have been doing leadership interviews. We've talked to people here on campus and people off of campus who are recognized leaders in different fields. Some of them are pastors. Some of them are business leaders. Some of them are deans and vice presidents here on campus. But I did think it would be significant to hear from the younger generation in terms of leadership and what is the perception of leadership. And so some of the questions may be familiar to those who've been listening to these podcasts, but kind of want to walk Cheyenne through some of these. And I guess maybe we'll begin with one that says, from your viewpoint, let's talk about characteristics that every leader ought to possess. And what do you think, if you're making a bullet list, 1, 2, 3, what are the 3 most important? And then zero down to what is the single most important quality that you have to have as a leader.
So I would say, so go from bottom to top. I would say the 3rd most important thing that comes to my mind is going to be work ethic. You need to have good work ethic, because you have people who are looking up to you and really looking to you for guidance, and it's important to actually know what you're doing, while the other characteristics are going to touch on more emotional or just human being-like characteristics.
So kind of lead by example. I'm going
yes.
to work hard because I want the people who are following me to work hard.
Exactly.
Okay? So work ethic, then what?
I would say the second one is grace. You need to have grace for people because they are going to mess up and they are going to let you down, but you are also going to mess up and you are going to let them down. And if you want grace, I think you need to give grace first.
Two-way street of grace then.
Yes.
Okay. So the number one characteristic you need to have.
The number one characteristic to me is humility. I think that being humble is so important, not only because you want people to see that in a liking you way, but because they need to respect you. And I know that my leaders are not perfect. I know that they don't know everything, and I have so much more respect for them, and it is so much easier to go to them when they're just very humble about that and they say, hey, I'm figuring this out too. Maybe I don't know the answer. Maybe I don't know this. Let's figure it out together. I just think really being humble is crucial to leading other people.
So part of that connection, at least in your mind, humility fosters easier dialogue and conversation.
Yes, it fosters better relationships.
So what are you going to do with someone who says, okay, in my mind, a leader is somebody who gets out front and takes the lead, and they've got to be strong and you know, take no prisoner kind of attitude, and suddenly you're saying, but you have to be humble.
Yeah.
So where does the strength of leadership and humility, how do you wed those two ideas together?
I don't think that being strong and being determined means being prideful. I think that there is a way to be a strong person and to be a determined person and to be someone who takes charge of conversations and gets things done without thinking that they are the end-all be-all of whatever organization they're leading. I think that you can be strong and you can be determined and you can still say, I'm under leadership in some ways. Like, I am still looking to other places for guidance. I think there is, I mean, honestly, some of the best leaders that I've ever known are incredibly strong and determined, but that piece of humility in them is what drew me closer to them.
So give us an example of someone that you know of that has those qualities.
My mom.
Your mom. Okay.
Yeah. So I love my mom so much. And I have just always seen her not only in our own household, but with my friends from school, for example. She would just take any person in no matter what. And the thing is, she would never lie to them. She would never, if they were opening up to her about something, being vulnerable with her about something, she would never say, oh, it's okay, I'm just going to baby you through this. She would lead them through it with strength, but also with humility enough to say, hey, you know what? I've been there. I've been this person. I've seen these things, but this is what you need to do. I think that there is a lot of truth in humility. And I think I have so much more respect for my mom.
Sure.
Because
on one hand, you have that strength of saying, I'm going to help you forge ahead with the truth. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, you've got this, but I'm not just going to tell you what to do. I'm going to love you through this experience and kind of get you there. So besides your mom, someone else who's had an impact on you as a leader, and why is that person a leader in your eyes?
I would say my pastor from my church back home, who passed away almost 2 years ago. But Von Gerald was the epitome of strength in the softest way, because he fully, 100% every day, started it and ended it with Jesus. And to me, that was so evident in his interactions with people. Every time that I saw him interact with someone, even if it was a really, really difficult conversation, you could just see grace flowing through the entire conversation. And some people who had issues with him, I mean, growing up, I saw people have issues with him, and because I was very close to him, and their facial expressions would change in the midst of a conversation. If they were talking about him in a poor way, if they were talking to him about something that was hard for them, their whole demeanor would change because they just realized, oh, at the basis of who he is, he has a love for Christ, and that is overflowing into a love for me.
Yeah.
So
we represent different generations, right?
Yes.
I'm one and you're another. I'm slightly older than most college students. So I kind of feel like every generation of leaders, they carry the baton for a while.
Right.
There's stuff that we try to accomplish and some things we get done. And I do think that part of the role as a leader is to hand off to the next generation a better world. And I would like to think in many ways that we have pushed that envelope a little bit. I mean, I would like to think that we understand human dynamics better. I'd like to think we're better in race relations than a generation before mine. I don't know. You know, the current things make all that kind of crazy. Right. But in terms of being an emerging leader, knowing that, you know, the baton is getting tossed to you guys, what do you see as some of the biggest, and I'm thinking in terms of modern-day religion, what are some of the bigger hurdles that are out there? What are some of the bigger problems that you think your generation is going to have to solve?
There are a lot of sensitive conversations that are being avoided right now because there are so many controversial things happening in our world, in politics, in our country, not in our country, everywhere. There are just, you just see controversy everywhere. There are conversations that people are afraid to have.
So let's name some of them. What do you think they are? What are the storms on the horizon?
I think that racism is something that is just huge right now. It never stopped being huge, but now it's...
Do you think that has gotten worse in the last few years in your mindset, or are you just think that you're of an age now where you're more aware of the inequities and the injustices that are out there, or what?
When I was in grade school, I was taught that racism was in the past. I learned about it from history books, so I had totally closed the chapter on racism, and I do think that the media has a lot to do with the fact that we are totally inundated by racism right now. I mean, you can't go anywhere and not see it on display. And I do think that the media is driving a lot of that. And obviously the media has grown over the past few years.
Sure. So. Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think even for me, in my mindset, I kind of felt like we had, you know, crossed over some barriers. We had sort of, you know, gotten a lot of that behind us. And it does seem to have kind of a resurgence. And so I think, yeah, racism is going to continue to be something that the modern church is going to have to solve. And how do we do race relations, and how do we truly become Christ-like to the world around us so that we don't see through the lens of color, we see people and value their worth for who they are.
Right.
So besides racism, what else is out there for you guys?
I think immigration is a huge issue right now because a lot of millennials have I can't think of the word for it, but it's the heart for nonprofit type organizations. We're all very just outreach based. And so when we hear anything about immigration, we are immediately just, let's take them in, let's do this. And the generation above us doesn't necessarily agree with that. They are very much so about national security. And I think that this all comes from what we've experienced so far. I know the generation above me remembers 9/11 a lot more seriously than a lot of us do. And so I think it's hard because we're all delegitimizing each other, and that's not helping, that's hurting. So,
I mean, I think for me, you know, 9/11 happened in 2001, so I was about 40 when that happened. And so, I don't think it didn't well up in me a fear of immigrants or an intolerance toward immigrants. But I do think, and maybe it's a generation even above me who but what's interesting about that is that if you keep climbing up that ladder of generations, then you get a whole group of folks who were first generation immigrants who came to the country, right? I mean, my great grandfather on my mother's side, they were they immigrated from Scotland, you know, and it came through Ellis Island and did that whole thing. And so, but I do think there is a lot of rhetoric, as you said, in the media, and what are we going to do about it? So racism, immigration, what else we got?
LGBTQ.
LGBTQ, yeah. So what do you think your generation is on that, and where are you in particular on that?
I think that my generation is very, very, very loving and accepting. And I admire that strongly. I think that we're split in some ways. You do see people coming in from the far right, and you do see people coming in from the far left, and their opinions definitely clash, and I understand that. From a religious perspective, I have actually really had to seek God through this question my entire college career, because I came into college feeling one way about it, and then it switched. And then all of a sudden I started going to another church, and then it switched. And I was just very back and forth, and never to a point where I was like, I am fully against this or fully for this. And so at some point this year, I kind of realized, well, silence is just as bad in some way, and not having my mind made up is just as bad in some way. And so I do think that it's a journey, but from my perspective, I think that love is truth. I think that if we are going to say that love is love, we also have to say that, because we're saying love is love in the context of, okay, well, the Bible says that we're just called to love each other. I get that. But the Bible also says that God is love. So this brings up a lot of different issues. And I heard a sermon recently where it was Chris Durso, and he talked about how we're saying love is love, but what that is saying is that love is equal. And he was saying, if we're going to relate this to the Bible, that's not right, because love is not equal according to the Bible. Love is not self-seeking, which means that love can be all about the other person, which means love is not equal. So I have a lot of thoughts about these things, but I do think that our generation needs to start thinking more about truth. Yep. And not just throwing out phrases that we don't completely understand yet.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think part of loving someone, if you really, really from a biblical standpoint love someone, then mm-hmm. you are somehow duty-bound to offer them the truth of God's teaching. And then right. how you interpret that, you know, that's all over the map.
Of course.
But, you know, I do think when people start talking about evolution of thought on these issues like racism, immigration, LGBTQ, you know, I do think evolution of thought is important. I think we all mm-hmm. migrate through what we believe, and sometimes maybe we do even change what we believe. But I think there's got to always be an anchor mm-hmm. that says, but is what I believe or what I want to believe, is it still anchored in biblical truth? And I
right.
think you have to have some kind of measurement.
There has to be alignment.
Is that maybe your generation has begun to move the needle even away from that a little bit. It's kind of like, you know, everybody just needs to get along, and so you don't draw some of those absolutes.
And I will be the first to say that my generation is more anchored in the world than any generation before us. We are encouraged to be. We are encouraged to be selfish. I mean, there are literally quotes about how your 20s are your selfish years and all of these different things. So we're claiming that. We're claiming, oh, well, my 20s are my selfish years. But then we're also going to claim this idea of complete acceptance and peace with each other, but you can't find peace with everyone around you if you're living from a place of selfishness. So I think that my generation is contradicting itself a lot, and I think that that's because our anchor has shifted.
Yeah, and it'll find itself. You know, it'll take a while, but it'll find itself. So let's go a whole different direction from there.
Okay.
Your generation is really the first generation to grow up with smartphones.
Yes.
Right? This tool that's always at your hand. Overused, overvalued, impacts your life too much, too little? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Absolutely overused, absolutely overvalued, and I am absolutely the biggest culprit of this. I have huge issues. I've actually come to realize recently that I turn to my phone when I'm getting upset with someone or when a conversation is getting awkward. I will just start mindlessly scrolling through mm-hmm. my phone for absolutely no reason. And then 5 minutes goes by and I'm like, wow, I just tuned out of what could have been a really important conversation because I was starting to feel hurt. So not only is the phone overused and overvalued, but I'm using it as a defense mechanism.
Defense and diversion.
Right.
So one of the things I read recently on some research, a book, I don't remember the author's name, but the mm-hmm. book was called The Shallows, and it's talking about what the internet and phones are doing to our brains. And one of the things it says it does is it is creating a level of hostility mm-hmm. in our personality, that we find ourselves at the breaking point. We're ready to snap a little sooner than we usually were. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's true? Is it true in your life?
Absolutely.
Do you find that by interacting with your phone, you get mad because you don't like what people are writing or what mm-hmm. they're thinking or what they're expressing?
Of course. I mean, we are building up these conversations and these realities in our minds based on what we see on the internet before anything actually happens in reality. And that's so crazy because not only is it harmful for important conversations that have to do with politics and faith and things like that, but people's self-esteem is plummeting. I lived with freshman girls. I've seen them form opinions on other people based off of the fact that they go onto Instagram and they scroll through someone's highlight reel. They will never, ever see the behind the scenes, but I see the behind the scenes and I know what that girl is actually going through. But then I have another girl who's jealous of her because she has no idea. And not only is she jealous of her, but she's feeling awful about herself and changing things about ourselves based on social media. So that's crazy.
So how do you pull back from that? How do you affect change? How do you make yourself less dependent and less reliant and less connected to your phone?
So personally, I've been thinking a lot about the fruits of the spirit. And for me, I think self-control is the biggest thing. If I want peace, if I want to claim peace as a fruit of the spirit, if I want to claim peace and joy in my life as a fruit of the spirit, I need to claim self-control too. And I think that my biggest problem with self-control is my phone. So I need to quite literally force myself to stop.
Yeah. How many times a day do you think you look at your phone?
I have no idea. Too many. And you know, a lot of it is communication, which is understandable, but so sad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality of it, because I remember when I was coming up, when I was in middle school, calculators first came on the scene. Light, electric, you know, you could, in your hand, you could hold this little device, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Yeah, I'm old as dirt. But they still made us learn math because they said, you know, what happens when you don't have a calculator? As though the world was ever going to backstep and we were going to have a time we didn't have a calculator.
I wish we would.
But see, now it's the same with cell phones. We're never going to be at a point where we say, you know, this has not been a good experiment. Let's do away with cell phones. We're always going to have them now. We've got to figure out ways to distance ourselves from them. And I'm even thinking with our institute, how we might offer weekend retreats that are social media and cell phone free, where you have to just see what it would do to your life. So, anyway.
And sometimes it's okay to start small. I mean, my friends and I, we don't do it every time that we're at dinner. We probably should. But we'll randomly just start stacking our phones up.
Yep.
And we play the don't touch the phone game. And I just, sometimes you do have to start small like that. You have to start with just telling everyone at dinner to put their phones in the middle of the table, because being with each other is more important. Being where your feet are is more important than being where your phone is.
Yeah, I think that's something I'm trying to do, a discipline I'm trying to have is if my phone rings while I'm talking to someone, or if a text comes in, I get the alert, I try to willfully say, all right, the person in front of me is more important than the person on the phone at this point. So I'm not going to break communication, conversation in order to take the call. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I know you. You even have your watch now, which so many people have their watches. And I'm not saying, like, oh, you have your watch. This is awful.
Yes, I have the Apple Watch. Yes.
But I know that it goes off on your wrist. And there have been times during class where you're like, I got to turn my watch off. Because now it's not just that your phone is off in your bag somewhere buzzing. It's that your watch will go off literally attached to your body.
Yep.
We'll get a text message or a phone call or a voicemail. It's insane.
And what that does
is, I want one, but it's insane.
Yeah, I mean, because like if mine goes off right this second, right?
Yeah.
It interrupts me for a split second,
right.
But it also interrupts you because you see it and you're in mind, you know, you're like, well, I wonder what that's about.
Right. And even if you don't interact with it, your mind has already jumped somewhere. Your train of thought is already different than it would have been if you didn't get that notification. It's crazy. Yep.
So today our conversation has been with Cheyenne Corbine, from New York, senior here at Belmont Christian Leadership, has just given us some thoughts on leadership and kind of people who mentored her, and then some random thoughts about cell phone and challenges in modern culture. So, Cheyenne, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I hope that it wasn't just, a crazy time. Maybe we'll do it again.
It typically is.
And I would say to anybody listening, if you want to hire somebody out of Belmont, come find her. She will do you an amazing job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks for the conversation.